If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Nerd Nest, everybody. I'm Bill. That's Carrie. That's Russ. How are you guys doing today? Russ, what's new, man?
Super awesome. Man, I just made a video. It's old news by the time this releases, but I made a video about setting up a retro emulation machine like for simpletons, basically for like children who can't read or for like your grandparents. And I'm so proud of this project. And so I'm just on a high right now after releasing that video. So super good.
I haven't watched it yet, but I remember, I saw the thumbnail, and you had, what's the device, by the way?
It's the Amranic RG353PS, so it looks like a Super Nintendo, but also a Game Boy, kind of. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, and, I remember you talked about that in a recent episode, as a video as well. How's that compared to, say, Miu Mini Plus?
It's good. It's big, you know, like it's not something you can just throw in your pocket and take it with you, but it's so comfortable. And man, the nostalgia factor on this, I know people like get nostalgic when they see like a Game Boy shaped device. This is like so crazy to me. Like this is more nostalgic to me because the Super Nintendo was the system I never had in the early 90s. It's the one that got away from me. Like my parents bought a Genesis because it was cheaper. And so that hits all of those nostalgic notes for me as opposed to a Game Boy.
Carrie. What's new today, man?
I'm working on a few different things. I have Ugreen's 8-bay NAS that I'm putting through the paces, and I'm really putting it through the ringer. I've gotten the CPU on that thing over 100 degrees Celsius, but it's probably going to be running a little bit late on the review just because it's still kind of crunching away. I wanted to do multiple 4K streams and see where it was, but it's not really good to be doing that while it's busy doing other things. So I got to wait for it to simmer down and finish up. But yeah, other than that, I'm also finishing up my Asus G14 review. And that's it. That's it for me outside of working too much.
Yeah, I saw the Discord message this morning. In the pre-show, we were talking about Carrie's NAS, and we were talking about Plex servers, and then Russ had talked a little bit about like this flash in the pan thing that Plex was doing for retro games, and I said, oh, that's kind of like AntStream, right? And then he started to kind of correct me on that. So I know very little about AntStream. You said it lets you play your own games, and that makes no sense to me because you're streaming the games to your system. So how is it, like, how do you rip your ROMs and then put them on AntStream?
So not on AntStream is not. AntStream is, it's so, like, they have their own catalog and library, and they've got the licensing and stuff. What I was referring to is the Plex Arcade, which is what they, was the flash in the pan thing. And so they had it set up where if you had your own Plex media server, you could also put your ROMs on there, like you would your movies or your music or whatever, and then you would stream from your own Plex server to your device. So you're like streaming a game, like a Netflix game, basically. Like, it's kind of crazy. The thing is, they charged for that. $5 a month for the ability to play your own ROMs over your Plex media server. In addition to, like, you know, the payment that you would pay for, like, a Plex subscription, like Plex Pass or whatever. And so I don't think it caught on at all because of that extra cost. And so they ended up shelving it after a few months. But I had filmed a whole video about it. I'm like, oh, this thing is great. And they're like, wait. $5 a month, because like, there was like a 30-day trial, and I was like, no, I'm not paying $5 a month to play Mario 2. Not doing it.
I could see spending X dollars a month to stream from their servers, but you're streaming it from your own server.
Right.
I don't really get what you're paying for there.
Yeah. The thing is, too, there's another service, a third one, which I actually prefer over all this other stuff. It's called Web Arcade. And that one, what you do is you put all your stuff like on Google Drive or Dropbox, you put your games there, and then you load it up in a browser. But then when you start up the game, it doesn't stream it. It actually caches that game in your browser's cache. And so then you're just playing it locally. And so you're kind of streaming it in the sense that you're pulling it from a cloud server. But after that, you're just playing it directly on your device. So no lag, you can play it on an airplane, all those things that you'd want to do offline. And so that's the one I recommend. I made a couple videos about that years ago, but Web Arcade is like the best like streaming way of playing your own ROMs, basically.
Very cool. I finally fired up the Delta emulator on my phone this week. And the game, well, first off, I love that it has save states and stuff. And I didn't even, like, I was just playing it, and my wife was like, dinner's ready. And so I just set my phone down and walked away. And it automatically did a save state when I closed the app, which is awesome. But I was playing Zelda Phantom Hourglass. And I'm just going to load my state in real quick. And I have to say, you know, Nintendo... they've done a lot of things that I find to be irritating.
It's an understatement.
And when it comes to, well, I can't get it to load right now. I think I just overwrote my save state because I'm an idiot. But they've done a lot of things that irritate me. But one thing that I got to say that they got right, this game is terrible without a stylus. Like, my thumb is too, like, I thought that this would be the game that would be amazing on the phone. Because it's a touch, it's a touch first game. That is exactly what it was made for. But it's terrible because my thumb's just too big, and I can't see what the hell I'm doing when I'm trying to control Link. I also wanted to find a way to try and play it without the controls on screen, so I could just have the two screens and have it just be a touch screen. But I think the only way that that's going to work is if Nintendo re-releases these games on phones or whatever. But this Delta works fantastic. This game, disappointing. I was really looking forward to playing this on my phone because of the vertical oriented screen and the touch features. So
just get smaller thumbs, you know.
Any advice there, Russ, or am I just beat?
You can get those little stylus pens thumbs, that have like the little rubber nub on them, and that'll work on like an iPhone.
Smaller
thumbs,
it is.
I don't think you want another accessory in order to play that game.
iPhone, you know, but I don't think you want another accessory.
No, I won't carry it. Like, I hardly ever carry around the backbone. Like, I have it, but it doesn't make it into my backpack as much in recent days. So I can't see myself keeping a stylus in my backpack. Or even if I did, I'd be like, where the hell is it? And I'd spend 15 minutes looking through my backpack trying to find this thing. And then I'd find it some other day when I was looking for something else. Anyway, that's not what we're going to start the show with today. We're going to start the show with rumors about the Switch 2. Now, that's the thumbnail that I'm sure you guys clicked, unless I changed it. Who knows? We've got some rumors about Joy-Cons backwards compatibility being tough for the Switch when it comes to all of the Joy-Cons. And I am of the opinion that that doesn't friggin' matter because they're terrible. The Joy-Cons are bad. I don't like the Joy-Cons. That being said, they're saying that they might be attached via magnets. And Carrie, here's my question to you. Do you think that magnets can like really hold it enough that you would feel comfortable like sitting there and holding your Nintendo Switch or Super Switch, sorry Carrie, your Super Switch in your hands by the Joy-Cons and not worrying about the centered device just falling?
Yeah, they can make them however, but there's got to be something else there, or very powerful magnets, or some other type of mechanism to lock them in afterwards, beforehand. Something, right? Because I think everyone is of the same mindset. You can't just have just magnets clipping into something and hoping that, you know, works for you. I don't see Nintendo doing that. They're notorious for being mindful of kids. I'm sure they do some type of QA type of stuff. And when they have the Switch carts, they're like, that kid just ate that cart. We got to make these things taste bad. Like, you know, they're thinking on another, you know, they're thinking all cases. And truthfully, the coating or whatever they put on Switch carts to make them taste bad is genius. That's a great call. And also when the Switch is coming out, I actually got invited to the Nintendo event, and they were always showing off. They were really proud. The Nintendo engineers that were there, they were like, check this out. It's got a kickstand. And then he was just like, and he broke it off and he's like, and he clipped it back in. And I was like, oh, that's cool. So there's like all these things that they were doing that they were anticipating things to break off. But being able to put them back on, and the Joy-Cons themselves having rails and stuff. So the magnets, I think they're just going to be like, here, kid, grab it from this and go run. Hmm. And if they can run and that thing stays attached, that's the Nintendo seal of, okay, that's good enough. How they get there, I have no idea. But that's like rule number one for Nintendo, right? I'm very confident in Nintendo to make something that is kid-proof. I'm going
to
say that.
Yeah, their devices tend to... they're not elegant. They are, what's the word that I'm looking for? I don't want to use the word kid proof, but rugged. They're rugged.
Tonka tough.
Tonka tough. That's awesome. So maybe the magnets work, maybe they don't. Obviously we'll wait to see. The first off, people are complaining. They're saying, well, I got all these Joy-Cons, but those Joy-Cons are bad. Like, they all have drift, and do you guys think that Nintendo is going to learn from, like, do you think that they're going to go with Hall Effect? Valve specifically said, we're not going with Hall Effect because we don't feel like it's good enough yet. Do you think that Nintendo would go with that same thing? What do you think, Russ?
Well, one point about the magnets thing, too, before we move away from that, so there's a device called the Pimax Portal that I reviewed, and it has magnetic, like switch-like Joy-Con things. They're like Bluetooth, and they snap in. They're like super strong magnets. And one thing talking about this whole kid-proof thing is they are so strong that I have to be very conscious of not pinching my fingers because the magnets are so strong. Like, it can get ya, you know? And so I can't imagine Nintendo doing that because it's a hazard, you know, like for me as a 40 something year old guy, like I'm like, oh, I better not hurt myself. And I can only imagine a kid is going to be even worse. And on top of that, even though they are super strong, you can just pull them off pretty easy. You know, like you do this and you're like, boop, and they come right out. And so, you know, I hate how Switch Joy-Cons right now start to feel like rickety over time. Like they get that little creakiness to them, you know, but the magnets from day one are going to be like easy to pull off. They're going to fall off in a backpack, you know, that kind of thing. And so, anyway, so yeah, I don't know if magnets are the way to go unless they have some sort of innovation, which they are like very likely to be able to do, you know, unless there's some sort of innovation, I can't see them going the magnet route. Now, in terms of the Joy-Con, like the sticks and stuff, yeah, they got to do something. I think if they didn't, that would be just the dumbest thing in the world. Like they don't address like their current Joy-Cons, you know. And, you know, there's companies like Gullikit who have made Hall Effect Switch Joy-Cons, and they work pretty well. You know, they're not a huge difference, honestly, between those and like just the standard ones, but it's a trivial amount of money, I think, for them to make a bunch of those. And so, yeah, I don't know. I see them as improving them. I don't know if it'll be Hall Effect, but just making them better.
Well, I mean, but we've had this issue with drift since very early in the Switch's life cycle, and they've had multiple revisions of the Switch. They've had a chance to say, you know what, let's update this so it's not going, so we're not using potentiometers, because potentiometers are clearly causing issues. And they don't. They just kept going with the same thing. I'm guessing because it's cheap and because the Joy-Cons are easily replaceable. They're expensive, $70 for a... Are they still $70?
Yeah.
Yeah, $70 for a controller for your Switch, but that's not something there you have to like send in your stuff, because you just say, "Oh, well, okay, well it's just the controllers." So I think that at one point early on, my son was getting I'm just trying to remember because this was a long time ago. My friend's Switch was getting drift, and so I loaned him an extra set of my Joy-Cons so that he could mail his Joy-Cons to Nintendo so that they could get fixed. And like, that's the kind of thing that where they're just like, well, they'll just mail it to us when they break instead of making it so that they don't break. I think that there's obviously somebody there with a spreadsheet that said, this will make us more money if we do it this way. And they decided that, you know, potentiometers are the way to go. So I don't think that they're going to switch over to, no pun intended, I don't think that they're going to switch over to, what's it called again? Hall Effect. I don't think they're going to switch over to Hall Effect joysticks, I think it's even though they should.
It's also it's a can of worms effect too, because what if they did come out mid-cycle with, hey, here are the updated Joy-Cons. Is every other current customer going to be like, well, what's wrong with mine? Like, what am I supposed to do now? Do I need to return? You know what I mean? Like, I think they didn't want to kind of get into that. One, maybe acknowledging that they, you know, like, I don't know if it's a pride thing or just a Nintendo standard where they don't want to acknowledge that they made a mistake or whatever. And so they just kind of let the thing, you know, kind of play through. Or if, yeah, they didn't want to deal with the blowback of people who are current owners and saying, oh, now mine's outdated. Like, what do I need to do to upgrade? You know, and that kind of stuff.
Pay money.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you bring up a good point that maybe they decided, you know, there were class action lawsuits. I don't know how those ever resolved. And by putting out a Hall Effect or something that wasn't potentiometers, changing their design in some way might have been seen by the courts as like some kind of admission that they screwed up.
Right.
Yeah. That's interesting. It also says that it has a bigger screen, 1080p, and they also say, well, first off, let's stop with 1080p and just talk about that real quick. Like the previous Switch is 720p, but they're making the screen a little bit bigger. Carrie, do you think that 1080p is a necessary increase?
Especially for the Switch, where it's at. It's already a low-power device. You're just making your job harder for yourself and every other developer if they have to target something higher. And even if you have... Let's say that they're like confirmed, yeah, we got DLSS. We're good to go. NVIDIA gave us the good stuff. We can upscale like the Dickens. You're still... it's not free, right? There's still a cost for that. Going up to 1080p, for what reason on a low power device, the juice isn't worth the squeeze. They can do it. I kind of don't think that they would. Nintendo's typically very conservative. I would almost anticipate 720p on a handheld again, and then they do more upscaling that you can get when docked. That makes more sense to me. Especially because 720p even on 8-inch still looks good. Does anyone complain about image quality on the Steam Deck OLED being 800p, 7.4-inch? Like, it looks great. The thing is that handhelds, a side benefit of handhelds on a smaller screen, it hides a lot of things. So you don't need a bunch of definition. There's things that kind of blend in, and you're, you know, not really, like, getting super close to it. So, I don't see it personally, but who knows? It's a net negative in a handheld state, especially on the low-powered one.
So I would like to disagree with that, sir. Okay. So I like seeing 1080p on 6 inches or higher of a screen. I can see the crispness. I like that. And I think it might be a pretty easy solution for them. If they've got a higher processor with more efficiency, you know, lower nanometers or whatever, and they're able to pump this out, that they could... I'm thinking backwards compatibility. I'm not thinking about next generation. I'm thinking about if you can play your Switch games on a Super Switch in 1080p, that's basically just goofing it into thinking it's docked mode, but you're playing docked mode on a handheld. That looks so much better. I mean, you can play a Steam Deck where you do Yuzu or, you know, Ryujinx or whatever, and you can play it in handheld or docked mode, and docked mode always looks better even on that screen. And so I would like for them to find that solution. I'd love to play my Switch games backwards compatible in docked mode on a Switch 2.
Carrie, you want to fight back at him?
Yes, you can see the, I'm in total agreement, you can see it. I don't think it's worth it at all. The juice, I don't think is worth the squeeze at all. When you take a look at how much more power and performance is required to achieve double the density of pixels, right? That's a cost.
Right.
Yeah, they could do it with DLSS. They could absolutely do that for, I don't know if it's going to backtrack for all their old Switch games, because that seems like there's going to have to be something in there. It's not going to just magically be there. DLSS does require work to get done. So all of those DLSS, all of those old Switch games, which we're all hoping is backwards compatible. Like, I think, excuse me, I think when you look at the Joy-Con question of backwards compatibility for Joy-Cons, I think people are more lenient to like, okay, well, I need new Joy-Cons. But if the games didn't work, like the cartridges don't work on the Super Switch, I think there's going to be a bigger problem there. And there's less of a reason for Nintendo to switch up the cartridge.
Yeah.
That aside, yeah, the increase in performance, yeah, we can go to 1080p just by forcing it. They could. I'm just saying that Nintendo is a historically conservative company. And I don't see 1080p when you look at how much the cost is from a battery life perspective and all the other things accompanied with it. Increased heat, all the other stuff. They just want something where you're not going to hear the fan. You'll get 3 to 5 hours of battery life on it, and that's it. So I don't personally see it. I don't think that the juice is worth the squeeze. But that's where I am.
I think that it should probably just be a toggle. It'll say Russ on one side, carry on the other.
Russ on one side, carry on the other.
No, it won't have it'll have your faces. Right. Like little Nintendoized face what are the Miis? Right. Little Miis of Russ on one side. He'll be standing with his arms like this.
I'll be like red, like hot, because it'll be like it'll run the device hotter or something.
I gotta say that, like, I don't know where I land on this. I like the idea. Well, first off, there won't ever be a toggle, because Nintendo says this is the way that it is, and that's how it is, and you're just gonna have to deal with it, sucker. And you're like, well, okay. We're not gonna get a toggle.
Right.
That's never gonna happen. As much as I would love to see your faces on my Nintendo Switch every time I boot it up, never gonna happen. So part of me says 720p is perfectly fine, because whenever I played the games on the Switch, they looked great. But mostly the games that I played on the Switch, mostly, were the first party Nintendo games. And they are very good at choosing art styles that don't require super high resolution. I play a game like The Witcher 3 on the Nintendo Switch, doesn't hold up quite as well. It's impressive that it runs on that at all, but it doesn't hold up quite as well. And so that's where a higher resolution would have made it look better, but I would have had significantly worse performance. Yeah. That being said, you mentioned DLSS. Yeah. I don't think that Nintendo is switching away from NVIDIA, because Nintendo's Switch has NVIDIA Tegra X1 chip in it, and I'm assuming that NVIDIA is making the chip for the Super Switch. So everybody's talking about upscaling and all this stuff recently.
Yeah,
I think that that's definitely a possibility. And if you make it a higher resolution screen and then you use DLSS, yes, it does require some of the GPU in order to do that. But if you are using a fraction of the GPU to upscale to a higher resolution, is it possible that that would look better than it would if it was running at 720p on the same GPU without any upscaling at 720p?
So the latest DLSS stuff is very good. It's no longer how it used to be, where you could, you can kind of see some weird oddities and stuff. If you were, so thinking about like The Witcher 3 as your example, first, CD Projekt Red would have to update the game to include DLSS on the Super Switch. So that's like number one. And they probably would do it. So they would have to support that. And then it would have to either be running at 1080p or running at a sub-resolution of 1080p and then upscaling to 1080p, where if you're using the Tensor cores and stuff, yeah, that's fractions of a cost in terms of how much power you need to put into a machine to upscale it to get that image quality. The part that is the thing that we have no idea about is these are all cut down cores and cut down clocks to run in a handheld state. So we don't like how we don't know where that's going to land just yet, right? So it's not like we're running in a desktop and you're trying to compare whatever's going on desktop or laptops and say, oh, that's going to be what's going to be on the Switch. The Switch is running at, I mean, really, really low wattages. When you take a look at the entire thing, it's like 2 to 3 watt TDP. It's so little that it's like absurd if you were to try to compare that to anything else. So those are challenges. Those are challenges that we're not aware of yet. Yes, they could be there, but it's likely that DLS is going to make a bigger improvement when docked versus being in a handheld, just because of clocks and other stuff. Now, the Tensor cores, I don't think that they can be on a separate clock domain. On the GPU core, I think the GPU core has pretty much runs them all at the same clock domain. So that remains to be seen. We still don't know anything about if they're using NVIDIA. We assume they will. We all want them to because we want backwards compatibility to be easy and all the other stuff. But there's more of a bigger story to how the X1 came into Nintendo's hands in the first place. It's largely because NVIDIA had tons of losses. Like, they were desperate to get into the mobile industry. Desperate. They acquired a company to do software-defined radios for radios. They were trying to make a chipset for phones. They were trying to sell chipsets for phone use. And every phone company avoided them. But the problem is that NVIDIA had to make these chips. So they scheduled time to make these chips. Now they're sitting on chips that no one's buying. So they're like, oh crap, what do we do with this? They make the NVIDIA Shield. So that's why a bunch of NVIDIA Shields came around, because they made lemonade out of lemons. And then they were sitting on all these stuff, and then they go to Nintendo, they say, hey, we're here and you want to do something. And Nintendo's like, yeah, we'll buy that from you, but, you know, we're not going to pay you much. And they're like, that's cool. But now 150 million Switches sold, and NVIDIA's, you know, and Nintendo's like, hey, you got the next one? And they're like, oh, you want the next one, huh? I don't know if you know NVIDIA, but we like money. Right. Do you know how much we charge for our best GPU? Whew. It's $1,800, sir. So that them not saying anything, I have to wonder. It's a really interesting thing because Nintendo likes making money on hardware, but so does NVIDIA. And they don't mind just destroying their relationship with it because they've done it in the past. They've done it with Microsoft. They've done it with Sony. They've done it with Tesla. They've done it with nearly every B2B relationship they've ever had because they're just merciless. They're just like, you like our stuff. We know how good it is. Pay us top dollar or go get out. And everyone leaves. So, you know, there's still that whole mystery around it. Will they like use it? It's likely, but I would really love to see the terms for whatever that came to.
So let's say that that NVIDIA does power the Super Switch. One thing that I could, you know, you're talking about, well, DLSS is not like automatic. It has to be built into the game. Like, if I'm, you know, putting on my businessman hat, and hopefully it doesn't shade my eyes, but if I put on my businessman hat and I say, well, you know what? We could just charge $10 and say, hey, guys, guess what? We're going to upgrade The Witcher 3 for the Super Switch, and it's only going to cost you $10. And it'll run at 1080p instead of seven. Well, actually, I don't think it runs at 720p. I think it runs at 480p. Yeah, it runs at a reduced resolution. You know, we're going to increase that resolution maybe up to 1080p, probably not. But, you know, we'll do that at DLSS upscaling, and you won't be able to tell the difference. And now you got a bunch of people buying DLC, which is basically just they updated the game to get DLSS working in order to hit higher resolutions. Oh boy, that's as somebody who wants money, that's attractive to me, because I could, as Nintendo could say, all right, all of our games, we're gonna bump them up and they're all gonna be backwards compatible. You could still play them on the Super Switch, but if you pay an extra $10, you're going to get a better experience, kind of like the PS4 to PS5 upgrades, or the I think Xbox does the same thing. I don't know. I don't buy Xbox games. I just Game Pass them, but that kind of thing. Russ, would you rebuy or buy an upgrade to get that 1080p on the Super Switch?
Yeah, you know, it's just so uncommon for Nintendo to charge you for the same thing again. You know, that's kind of funny. But yeah, you know, I think I would if it was like Metroid Prime remastered and pay another $5-$10 to get it remastered or whatever. I can see myself doing that just to get the latest and greatest. I'll be very choosy about which game is worth it, you know. I could see that kind of happening, but I don't know. It really complicates the ecosystem, and they don't like to complicate things. So I'm not sure if they would want to do something like that. I don't know.
What if you had to do the Super Nintendo Pass? So as a monthly subscription, they get it. But you had to do
I was thinking the exact same thing.
Super top tier one. They're going to make a third tier of it now.
Right. Oh my gosh. That whole thing is a racket.
So it's Nintendo Switch, Nintendo Switch Online Super Edition, where we're going to X dollars a month on top of the subscription that you're already paying, and it upgrades all any game that gets that upgrade. You get that upgrade for free. Yeah, free for as part of your subscription, but that means that you don't have to pay for them each separately. What do you guys think, Russ?
You know, this whole concept too is going to eat into storage. You think about it, right? Each of these games are going to have a download file you have to download and keep on there. It's going to do an online check to make sure you paid for your online subscription or to open it up. You know, I can see this getting complicated. You know, they don't like what you're going to have to buy a bigger micro SD card now because you've filled it up with storage just to be able to play the game that you have a cartridge for. Like, there are parents who are not going to understand that, and so. I can see this getting a little bit too, like, for us, yeah, we can see this model. I don't know if, like, you know, Jane Doe over there in Alabama is going to think the same thing.
All right, folks from Alabama, send your emails to Russ at angryemails.com. I get what you're saying. I just think that's a monetization, that's a new monetization model that Nintendo doesn't currently have. And so I can see them looking at that, twisting their mustache just a little bit and saying, "Oof, I think I could use some more money." Speaking of, you know, we talk about the backwards compatibility and the cartridges and everything. It's supposed to, the new one is supposed to take old cartridges, but the new cartridges won't fit in the old one. We saw this before when we upgraded from the DS to the 3DS. The cartridges would go in and they had like a little tab on them on the 3DS so that you couldn't put them in the 2DS because they didn't want people to buy these games, put them in a 2DS, and then be like, what the hell? It's not working, because they don't want to complicate things, as Russ is saying. So if they're going to, you know, have a new cartridge that has a slightly different shape that allows you to put the old ones in, I mean, that sounds like a win for everybody. I did not expect that to happen. Carrie, you count that as a win?
Yeah, of course. Like, yeah. I think there's a part of me, right, that was like, there's got to be someone in Nintendo that has a few brain cells that there's like, you can't just keep on just be like, okay, that's done with. Make the table clean. Right. Everyone has to rebuy all their stuff. They have to have firmly realized, especially with how popular the Switch is. Switch is just uber popular. And with the eShop, and I know there's a bunch of people buying on digital, could you imagine? It's not like the Wii U, right? The Wii U, no one bought. So they could just, like, wipe the table and not many people are going to care. And even those people that are like, yeah, I get it. Like, all right, no problem. But if they did that for the Super Switch, hoo boy, you're going to have a bunch of people that are in this world of iPhones, Androids, and everything else where PS4s, PS5s, Xbox Ones, the Xbox Series... Everything was just backwards compatible. Since 2013, there has been no notion of, you know, backwards compatibility being a thing that it may or may not happen. So, yeah, I'm glad they did it. Also, I made the personal decision to stop collecting at the Nintendo Switch. So if they didn't, I would not be buying any physical Super Switch games at all. Like, that would be it. That's that. Like, literally, that was what I had made, like, a principle I was going to stand on. So yeah, I'm glad they're doing it.
Awesome. Let's move on real quick. And, you know, we kind of were talking about upscaling. And I put out a video, we're recording this on Sunday, I put out a video this morning about AMD's Fluid Motion Frames, which is now available on pretty much anything that's running Windows and AMD hardware. So like an ROG Ally, a Lenovo Legion Go, I'm sure that there's a million AMD-focused mini PCs that will be able to use this. And I did it using the
ROG Ally.
What's it called? The white one. What's
so
it?
So forgettable.
ROG Ally. Thank you. Yes, the ROG Ally, the white one. So forgettable. I gotta say that first off, it almost doubles your frame rate. But and it did when I was looking at the game. It looked smoother to me, but Russ and I were talking about this a little bit before we started. When you are moving your camera back and forth wildly, everything falls apart. Like, basically what happens is they stop the frame generation when that's happening because they know, I can't do anything with this. There's too many changes happening. And then it kicks back in afterwards. Now, I need more time with it to make a decision on whether or not I think it's overall good or overall bad. Russ, you said that you tried it a bit. What did you think of AMD's Fluid Motion Frames? And do we think that that's something that can be done on the Van Gogh chipset for the Steam Deck?
So the camera thing that you're talking about where it like moves so fast or whatever, it reminds me of like when you go to the doctor and you're like, it hurts when I do this. And then he says, don't do that. You know, so I guess, you know, in regular gameplay, yeah, maybe it won't actually come up, you know, but I did try it. I tried it on my Legion Go and the Ally. I actually did it as part of my MSI Claw video. And I ended up not using the footage because I was like, I don't like the feeling of this. Like, I felt like I could tell it wasn't super smooth, you know? And so, and I only really tried it with like Cyberpunk, because I had seen a couple examples where they're like, oh yeah, check this out and stuff. And so I tried it and I was like, I would play with this off, you know, which it says something. And so that's like, I shouldn't even showcase this until it's, you know, closer to something that I would like. I am working on a Lenovo Legion Go update video. I'll probably show it off in there and be like, hey, this is the thing, whether or not you like it, you know? I don't know. I see it getting there at some point. It's kind of like we were just talking about DLSS being really good now. You know, it's like that, where it's like, give it time and see how it works. There's the input latency thing as well. So it's not something you'd want to play on like a high speed kind of game. You know, you wouldn't want to do that. But for other games, I could see it working. I don't know. Lock it at 40 and I'm good. That's all I need. You know, I don't know about Steam Deck. I'll let Carrie mention that one because I don't know enough about the hardware. So.
Carrie, you think AMD's Fluid Motion Frames could someday come to the Van Gogh APU?
It would have to be on RadV, so RadV would have to include it, which is a thing that Valve contributes to. So Valve is paying dollars to make RadV better. So it would have to be in that stack, and probably would have to be doing something with GameScope as well, or GameScope at least helping in some manner, because AMD's AFMF works better when you're using their latency reduction stuff.
Yeah.
It makes you turn their latency reduction on when you turn it on.
It's quite necessary. And it's quite necessary. The whole point and of higher frame rate is not that it looks smooth, it feels smooth. Like, you want it to feel good. And using AFMF on handhelds, we don't really get it anywhere to where it can be on all the time and you can experience any type of benefit. So we're always under this threshold of not good enough, where if you were running a game on a desktop and you were at like 100 FPS and maybe you can go to 200 FPS, that feeling might translate to somewhere in between there and make it a little bit muddy for you. And you're like, oh, you know what? I do feel it. But on handhelds, like when I'm using it, I don't feel anything. I feel like nothing. And I'm just like, I'm just going to disable this because I don't care about this. You're almost better off, like, as a... The thing about AFMF is it's a driver-level feature. It is not anything that any game has to accommodate for. The driver is, like, literally trying to do a bunch of stuff and says, okay, you know, there's not a bunch of motion, so I'm going to go in and hey, oh, too much motion, turn it down, guys. Like, or frame rate's not good enough, disable it. And it's like, all right, well, what are we really getting out of this? So... I was enthusiastic about it. It's not there for handhelds at all, really. There's other methods that would be better for us. Anything that is input latency reduction, I think, will just have benefits generally. Anything that you can do in the pipeline part of things where you can start, like, do stuff. If you've ever played around with asynchronous reprojection, that is, like, game-changer stuff. But that is a development feature in a game, not something you can do at a driver level. Basically, they already do it in VR games. In VR games, if you look around the game window, right? If you look around, it may not update where you look, but it'll keep it there, and it'll kind of like bounding box around you. But it in VR games, it's super helpful. Turns out if you use those same practices that VR games do with asynchronous reprojection and just do it on a mouse, you can get the feeling of doing 120 FPS, 60 FPS all the time, like a locked. But, you know, it's kind of like filling in the gaps, and you can do this like really kind of super macro fill in of like what's there, right? Like, you don't like, mm-hmm. Oh, well, there's purples here, so let's put purple there, you know what I mean? Wherever there would be blackness. And if you do that fast enough, you have a better feeling overall. So, but that's a development feature. And those are things that, like, you know, any type of upscaling stuff could do as well. I think that is a much better way, but again, that's a whole development stack that has to be there. Right now, not good enough for us. Just not good enough for us.
Yeah, the main thing about AFMF, I always have to think about how I say it, because for some reason I want to say AFMR. I don't even know what that is, but my brain says that. But the thing about fluid motion frames is that the devs don't have to do anything. It's all done, you know, after the game is done rendering stuff. And that means that you actually end up with two different frame rates. You have your base frame rate, which stays the same. And then you have another frame rate on top of that that shows that how many frames are being displayed on the screen, not how many frames are being generated by the game. And I do think that for games where you don't do very quick camera turns, I think it might actually work really well. Like maybe racing games it would be good in. I didn't test any racing games just because I didn't want to wait for my ROGL. I had to download 60 gigabytes of something to do a 5-minute test. So I ended up said, oh, I'll just stick with Cyberpunk. But Cyberpunk on the Ally went from 55 frames per second or something, and then it was up to like 115, and I handed the Ally to my son and I said, here's how you change it. So either change it or don't change it, and don't tell me, and then hand it back to me. And he did, and I messed around with it, and then I handed it back to him. I go, okay, now change it to the opposite of whatever it's on now and hand it back to me. And I could tell that it looked smoother. I did the same test with him. I handed it back to him. He was like, these look the same. So I think it's just on a per person basis. But I also, you know, I had spent a bunch of time up here like testing it and looking at it before I went down to him, because I wanted to see if there was a placebo effect. Mm. And I don't know, maybe there is. It's too hard to tell.
Yeah, for me, it was when I tested it, I was like, oh, wow, these numbers are much higher. And like, but nothing else is like, not the gameplay, just these numbers are higher. Like, that's how I felt. And so I was like, I'm living a lie right now. Like, I don't want to do this. So.
The lossless flame generation, that one's actually pretty good. You have to pay for it, but it's a bit better. I like it a bit better than AFMF, but you can see it. It's funny because so if you have like a HUD up, so if you have like Riva Tuner or whatever, mm-hmm. and you move, you can see the letters trailing. Like it's filling in the because it's going, oh, motion is going this way, so I have to do trails like this.
Yeah.
And it'll trail the HUD on top of it, so you can actually physically see Lossless Flame Generation working. I like it a bit better still, even though you can kind of see it.
Yeah.
I actually like their implementation better, just because it's like always on.
That's the app that has like the duck on it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
correct. Yeah, I bought that a while ago for, I think, the INEO Flip. I was trying to make something happen with that. So that's like a $8, $10 app that'll allow you to do that. Yeah, I was going to test that as well with my Legion Go update video.
I prefer that over AFMF, at least right now.
I feel like we're right on the cusp. We're right on the cusp of this upscaling and frame generation tech. Like, we're right where it's about to get good. And when I say get good, I mean, like, really good. And, like, when that happens, like, the power needed to play the games is going to just tank. You're just not going to need nearly as much power to do what you're able to do. And I almost feel like that's the next, like, this console generation, everybody was like, ray tracing. And I think next gen is not going to be about ray tracing. It's going to be about upscaling to, like, we're running this game at 1080p and nobody can tell. Like, that's the thing. And everybody thinks it's 8K. Like, that's the thing that I think is going to be a huge change coming down the road, and I'm looking forward to it.
You know, this is exactly what we need AI to do. Like, people are spending all their time making, like, images of emus sitting on decks or whatever, you know. They're taking up all that ChatGPT time when AI should be used to do this. Like, this is the one time where I'm like, yeah, I want AI in my life, and this is it. So,
yeah. The curious thing is, so, like, DirectSR that Microsoft is doing, which is trying to make an umbrella focused upscaling, they are effectively doing all the things that TAA type of stuff does for upscaling purposes. However, I have heard that they are looking to leverage AI NPU components that are on APUs to actually do the upscaling as well. So, provided that a dev can target DirectSR, and even though the NPU portion of stuff isn't there yet, the idea being, if you target DirectSR, you can do DLSS, XESS, and FSR today, but in the future, you would also be able to target those other parts of the APU that are already in a lot of our stuff right now, minus the Z1Es. The Z1Es actually have those disabled. So, which is interesting, right? Like, it was like, oh man, I would totally want that, and you wouldn't be able to get it because they fuse those off.
Right, because the Z1 Extreme is essentially a 7840U with those
the AI
things turned off
for efficiency. Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Efficiency. Yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing where it goes from there. You know, when this happens, I think that it's going to end up miniaturizing a lot of, like, laptops, handhelds, things like that, because they won't need as much power, and so they won't need as big a battery, and so they'll be able to get smaller and thinner and lighter, and I think that that's fantastic. But we're not there yet. We're there soon. Do you think that they stick with the Z1 Extreme in the, you know, we're looking at the next Asus ROG Ally or the next Legion Go? Do they stick with that, or do they go up to 8840U or what?
So I want to just say this one thing real quick. For the Z1E and the Z1, it is definitely I call it whiz biz. This is like business decisions that these companies make, right? You look at the Apple M1 is a fantastic APU. It's so good that I guarantee you, this is Carrie, Blackboard crazy Carrie conspiracy right now. I guarantee you that one of the reasons that we see a baseline MacBook with 8 gigabytes of system RAM is because they made something that's too good. They made it too good, and they have to make something that a lot of people that are going to buy the baseline version that's all soldered RAM. And that is going to be the reason people upgrade, because like, oh man, I don't have enough RAM. I need to go to 16 gigs or 32 gigs of RAM, because they made something too good. So they have to like limit something else artificially so that people buy that and have an upgrade path that they can have. And that's what you see with AMD. Like AMD Strix Halo is coming out soon, and it's going to be their first 256-bit wide APU that's coming down the wire. All of these companies could do this stuff. Every company can do the exact same thing that Apple did. Apple just said, hey, why don't we put like memory closer to the chip? Also, why don't we put more cache on? Also, why don't we do this? And it's like, oh, I see why. We made something that's too awesome, and now we can't sell the next thing. And like that's a problem that businesses are going to have. So the AMD makes the Z1 and Z1E because they're like, well, we have the 7840U, but we can't put it in there because we charge $1,000 for those laptops, and they're going to be like $600 in these handhelds. So why is someone going to buy a laptop for $1,000 when the handheld's the same thing for $600? Oh, I know. Let's make a Z1E, and we'll just chop something off and make drivers like not official and make things crazy. I don't think it's a good idea for like the Z1E. Like for us, it doesn't matter when these other handhelds are using 7840Us because they're getting the same Radeon drivers for everyone else. So when we plug in an AMD discrete GPU, it's using the same driver and everything's great. But then on like the Lenovo Legion Go, you put in a Thunderbolt and AMD and it's like, right. Oh, let me install the driver. And then you try to do it. You're like, oh, it's broken. Like, oh, well, that's a crappy experience. I don't think AMD was ready for that one. They're like, oh, we got to make sure that Z1Es can't have eGPUs with AMD stuff. Like, that's a weird restriction, right? Like, oh, no USB 4 for you guys either, because we're not giving you the latest driver. Like, that's a problem. So, I don't know. Like, does AMD just scrap their whole thing and just say, well, we're just going to have to sell 8840U, there are whatever laptop chip for these things? Or do they make an official chip and they just get off of the whole custom, like, semi-custom? It's not custom, right? They just said it's semi-custom and are charging money. This is a cheaper chip that they're selling to Asus and Lenovo and all these other guys so that they can make these handhelds cheaper in price without getting the full laptop part. So that's a whiz-biz problem.
Yeah, I can see that.
It's a custom name.
What was that?
Is what it is. It's a custom name. It's not a custom chip.
Right, right. It's like I get a... It's like I go to the store and I buy a shirt, then I take out a marker and I write Bill on it. Custom shirt. Nobody else has this shirt. It's custom.
Yeah.
Bill Extreme.
I mean, if you're looking for a custom chip, the Steam Deck has the custom chip because nobody is using the Van Gogh APU. Why that is, I have no idea, because it's super efficient. Maybe Valve said, we're just going to buy all of them. Maybe they made that deal with AMD when they were working on it. Who knows? But
supposedly that was supposed to be—it was supposed to be a Surface Microsoft Surface line chip, and then something fell through.
Oh, okay.
So the whole there's a weird story that happened there, and who knows what actually happened. But during the entire thing, it's like, oh, Van Gogh's coming, and then there was rumors of Van Gogh being canceled, and then a few months later, we saw the Linux kernel start having. the Linux kernel started having Van Gogh stuff in it, and then I made a video on that because there was revealing information there, but it was like really conflicting information that we were getting. It was like, here's Van Gogh, oh, it's canceled, but it's on Linux. Like, what's going on? Like, something's there. So it's really interesting, but who knows? It's whiz biz stuff.
Well, you know what, let's move on from the whiz biz and talk about you know what, real quick, I want to talk about Fallout. Did we all finish the show? Because I hadn't finished it last week. I'm done with it now.
I finished.
Carrie?
Oh, yeah. My wife and I finished long ago.
Okay. So don't worry. We're not going to spoil anything. I was just curious if these guys had finished the show. So I loved every second of it. Loved it. Last night, my wife and I were trying to decide for something to watch, and she said, I wish there was more Fallout. I love that show. And we ended up watching the Graham Norton show on YouTube instead. But like Fallout is, huh? What's that, Carrie?
Same difference.
Yeah, no. but Fallout is just amazing. And Microsoft and Bethesda, they're caught flat-footed here because they don't have a Fallout game to ship right now.
Yeah.
They're currently working on Elder Scrolls 6. Which Starfield took them so long that we're not going to see Elder Scrolls 6 come out for another couple of years, and then they start work on Fallout. Do you guys think that Microsoft should just say, okay, we're going to get somebody else to make it. You guys keep working on Elder Scrolls 6. We're going to get somebody else. Like, who would you get? Who would you have Microsoft pay money to give us a new Fallout game as soon as possible? Russ?
Golly. Man, that's a question. First thing I think is like, oh, people will say Obsidian, you know, because they made the originals and you know, they made New Vegas. I don't know what they're working on, and I'm not really sure. I haven't played an Obsidian game, to be honest, since New Vegas, so I'm not the guy to ask about that. First thought that I had was actually BioWare. I was like, I haven't heard of those guys in a while. You know, I like the Anthem, actually, and I obviously love Mass Effect. And so, I don't know, what are those guys up to? You know what I mean? Like, I kind of would like to see what they could do with that. That's the first thought I had.
What about you, Carrie?
Obsidian. Yeah, obviously Obsidian of then, even New Vegas, right? Even then, whatever team members are there probably don't exist collectively in Obsidian.
Right.
So
I'm sure they got laid off.
Yeah. So there's a part of me that obviously Obsidian of then made New Vegas very fast. So you need someone that could be nimble. You know, they have a bunch of studios. They have a tremendous amount of studios, and they have Obsidian. So, like, they literally have them. So, like, they could just do it, right? But then we don't know. We don't know what their plate looks like. Yeah, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that they don't have anything ready. And it's kind of like the Last of Us situation, right? Like, that game, like, we had Last of Us Remake coming out. But that's just a remake. Mm-hmm. And you could claim that the Fallout 4 remake is the same type of thing, but that's really getting panned real hard. So it's just a weird thing. They were caught off guard. Perhaps it was because they did such a terrible job with the Halo TV series that they're like, oh no, nothing happens when you release a TV series. No game change, really. And it's like, oh no, see what happens is when you make a good TV show, that's when people go looking for it. When you make garbage like you did with that Halo TV series, no one cares. Yeah, so that's a theory I'm going with.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Steam charts for Fallout 76. And like when you go back to when it was first up, when it first came out, it was 32,000 players were playing. And 7 days ago, 73,000 players were playing. I don't know if that's that's the all-time peak was 73,000. So that's double how many people were playing when the game first released. Of course, it was panned. It did not do very well.
Yeah,
people said it was real bad. I have to admit, I never played it because everybody said how terrible it was. And I don't think it had the VAT system in it, right? Because it was a multiplayer game. You can't really have VATs.
It's there. Like, I think it is there.
Like, slow down time and
it. I actually played Fallout 76. I have to remember that it was there. The only problem with my playing with Fallout 76 is that I had buddies that were playing forever, and they just like speed leveled me through it, and I didn't really get a chance to enjoy anything. Right? It was just like hup 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 hup. Like, come over here, take all this equipment. I just got all this amazing stuff, and I'm just taking stuff. But yeah, the VAT system is there. I want to say it is. So I only played it for a bit. But I could be wrong, but I'm relatively certain it is there.
Okay, fair enough. So, Fallout is amazing. If you have not watched the show, watch it. My wife spent most of the time watching it with her hand in front of her face because it is gross.
Yeah.
Super gross. But that's fine. We do the same thing when we watch Grey's Anatomy. She watches it with her hand up or looks away. Tell me when it's okay to look. And I say, okay. And I do a lot of the looking away. I had to look away a lot on Fallout because that was nasty. There's some nasty stuff in there. But it made me want to go back and play it again. And I've been playing Fallout 4. What were you just going to say, Russ? Sorry.
I was going to say I found a show that like kind of filled that gap for me, that hole, you know, you're kind of looking for it. And it was Three Body Problem. I don't know if you guys have watched that. That was good.
I watched it. It was really good.
By the creators of Game of Thrones, it's, you know, sci-fi trilogy. I never read the books because I knew they were a little bit too sciencey, a little bit too cerebral, and I was like, I don't think I'm in a place like making a YouTube channel, not getting sleep. I'm not ready to read this book, you know. But having the a show of it, you know, the first season is the first book. It was really good. There is episode 6. Your wife's gonna want to do that because there's some pretty heinous stuff that happens in that episode. But anyway, otherwise, yeah, it's pretty amazing.
I had some people talking about it, I think, on my Discord, and I never looked into it. Somebody had asked me if I was watching it, and I said I haven't heard of it, but I had heard the
it's title, on Netflix,
and I don't know anything about it. So if you're recommending it, maybe we'll try and check that out after we finish X-Men. All right, so since we're talking about Microsoft, Xbox sales are down 30%. Microsoft is saying, well, yeah, but, you know, we're making lots of money, and that's true. Like, they said, we had the 7 games among the top 25 on the PlayStation Store, which is nuts. But sales for their console are down 30%. Is it over for the series, Carrie? Do you feel like it's, like, the writing's on the wall and there's nothing they can do at this point?
It's really weird. I saw some reports that even the Series S isn't even on shelves in Japan at all. Mm. So they don't sell very well in Japan as it is, but it doesn't even exist there, which, you know, maybe they're gearing up for a next generation, which is potential. There's a lot of, you know, whatever, maybe potentially the handheld or something is coming. If it's a all digital Xbox Series X, that's not going to move the needle at all. Like, I think less people are going to care about that than they already care about series hardware as it is. It's in a bad place. It's in a real bad place for the hardcore amongst us. We all see it. No one's really like, we are already in the thing of, Russ and I are already in the, well, it'll come to PC. I'll just wait for the PC version of PS5 games, right? We're already in that thing. People have already sailed that ship for Microsoft games for years now. Like, well, if it's coming to PC, I'll just get it on PC. So there's that whole part of it, right? Where there's the waiters of the group. But there is a significant portion of people that are getting Game Pass from the console itself. So I don't see it currently where Microsoft says, well, we're not going to have a console anymore, whatever Game Pass is there, because that Game Pass is just a giant cash cow itself. So if they don't do a console, Game Pass will implode. Game Pass is the only reason I started playing on Xbox again ever. I left the Xbox in 2013. I bought an Xbox One, played it for like a week, and then never touched it again. I started genuinely leaving in 2010. I was like, multi-platform PC for everything else. I'll buy the exclusives on console, and I'll just play exclusives on console, but I'm going to do multi-platform everything PC. If it's multi-platform, PC only. That was a 2010 decision for me. So Game Pass is the only reason I'm playing right now. Like, Manor Lords is on Game Pass, and I want to play that. I'm like, oh, sweet.
Damn it. I bought it this morning.
Yeah, it's on Game Pass. Yeah, so you can just...
I'm going to return it then.
But yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. Is like, there's like lots of... I own so many games that Game Pass is this nice buffer for me where I can wait for the games to like go in sale or whatever. I can try it, and I don't really have any guilt or anything of like, oh, I have this big backlog. It makes me... I love Game Pass because of how many games I have and the what it offers me. Can they get rid... They're in a bad place. They're in a really bad place. I think they need a handheld. I don't know what they're going to do. It's I mean, the going third party seems very likely.
Yeah. I'll say right now, like, them boasting we had 7 of the 25 games on the PlayStation Store is not the argument of a console maker. Yeah. That's the argument of a game publisher. Right? Because and most of those games they didn't make, they just bought them, right? So Minecraft, like, they didn't make Minecraft, Fortnite, or whatever the other ones that are on the list that they own. I don't even pay attention to that stuff. But all the same, it's not a Microsoft game that we're talking about here. We're talking about Microsoft-owned game. And it's, again, it's just an argument of, like, it's grasping at straws to me. It's not a hardware maker kind of argument. It's a publisher argument.
Yeah, I don't think that they're ready to... like, the idea of going third party, I think that they do go third party, but I still think that they're going to make an Xbox to have a thing to sell, because, as Carrie was saying, because of Game Pass. But I think that they're like, it's somebody wearing power armor stepped on somebody's foot. That's what this feels like. It feels like Xbox is just limping. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they're in a bad spot. They're in a bad position. They offer all their stuff on other stuff, so it's not like you even have a thought of, well, is that you already have the understanding that whatever game is coming out from Microsoft is going to be available somewhere else. There is no question of like, well, when will I be able to play it? You're going to be able to play it day one elsewhere. So there's no real incentive to own Xbox hardware, and there doesn't seem to be any real advertising for it. I see it go on sale all the time, and I'm like, man, Xbox Series X for $300? And it's like, I see that routinely now. And it's weird that they still have not good numbers when I see it going on sale all the time. So it makes me believe that they're not just making a lot of them. Like, I would be very interested. Again, Series S is not on Japan's shelves, which, fine, they didn't really do anything. But it doesn't even seem like they're making a lot in anywhere. Like, they're going on sale, and I don't see those numbers going up appreciably for how often it's on sale. So it's a weird, it's a weird situation.
I was one of those suckers that bought the Xbox Series X. I have an S, and I was like, oh, I'll get the upgrade. I can do discs and all kind of stuff. I have only bought one game. It was Jedi Survivor, and I put it in, had to do a 100 gig download. It just made me mad. I came back. I had played it. I probably put 4 or 6 hours into that game, but I have, like, I've not got my $300 worth out of that Series X, and so I kind of regret that purchase, because there are just so many other places I can play games that are sometimes a better experience, and so I don't see it. I hope that they do something awesome. You know, I'd love to see some sort of Xbox Switch style thing where it's a handheld, and then you can put it into a dock and it's got a GPU or something. Like, all that would be awesome. But I don't know if I just want to buy another box. I'm not at that point with them.
I feel like they are running out of options.
Yeah.
And if they do anything that is similar to PlayStation, like, you know, we've got the rumored PS5 Pro coming out later this year.
Right.
If they release a similar powered system that competes head to head with the PS5 Pro, like, if I didn't have a channel, I probably wouldn't even consider it. You know what I mean? Carrie, if you didn't have a channel, would you even consider buying the next Xbox if it wasn't a handheld?
No, not at all. Zero reason.
No, not at all.
Okay. Let us know in the... I'm curious how many people would even consider it down in the comments. What if, like we talked about last week, or maybe it was the week before, what if it has access to other stores? Now, does that change your answer, Carrie?
Oh, that's interesting. I would probably use my Xbox Series X that I already have and see how good it is to, you know, make it a living room do it all thing. Because I don't use a Windows PC as my, I've never used a Windows PC as like my home theater thing ever. I briefly did that for a moment and said, this sucks. I've never used Windows PC gaming as a living room thing because it sucks that you put on a controller and they're like, oh, I need a mouse and keyboard. Let me just go do it. It's terrible. So if they could fix that and make everything work in a controller, the Xbox controller as it is right now, that's compelling, especially if all my games that I already have, that's compelling. I would have to see how it was. But I mean, truthfully, I'm not even interested in the PS5 Pro. Like, the what is 40%? More performance really mean to anybody?
40%.
Like,
it's a number, Carrie. Yeah, you can't argue with numbers.
I can't. I mean, it's 40%, but 40% is not the 7840U is 30% better than a Steam Deck in like certain wattages. Like, does anyone care? No, I don't think anyone cares. They still buy Steam Decks.
There's some people that care, and they care a whole lot. But when you're talking, that's talking about a thing that has to be plugged in, or like that you have to think about battery.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, it's, yeah, but I mean, it's 40% isn't doing it for anyone. We need 2x's minimum. That's like the CPU portion of the PS5 Pro is going to let down a lot of people, and still think like when there's like going to be GTA 6 or whatever, and maybe it hits 40 FPS, people are going to be like, PS5 does 40 FPS or 30 FPS, and like, why did I buy a whole new system for this? And you know, graphic fidelity wise, you can go to 4K easier, but frame rate wise, you're not. So I don't even see the PlayStation is the system that people buy. Does the PS5 Pro really move the needle for a lot of people when it really gets down to it? I think people are looking at that teraflop number and it's like, oh, it's 3 times better. And it's like, no, it isn't. It's 40% better. If it was 3 times better, then yeah, that would be something.
Oh, that's why they use those numbers, is so that can make people think that they're 3 times better.
Yeah,
so Russ? Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Kerry. I thought you were done.
No, I am done. You can go right along, Russ.
Well, okay, so Russ, same question to you. Does it change your answer if the Xbox plays games from other stores?
If I would be very hesitant to buy it if it's an Xbox Series X Pro or whatever. It does have that additional feature, whatever. I'd be very hesitant. I would want a full next generation upgrade. Like, I'm not even thinking about a PS5 Pro. Like, the PS5 games are amazing right now. Why do I need to make them a little bit more amazing when they're already amazing? You know, and so I don't see that. I don't like those mid-cycle refreshes personally. I figure as long as my games still work, I'll be good. I want to have a next generation feeling when I buy the next one. And so I like the idea of, opening up other stores and stuff like that. But I'm not sure if they're already getting burnout by going and upgrading from an S to an X. I don't think I'm going to do another upgrade this generation. Like, Microsoft hasn't won that trust for me.
Oh, absolutely.
I love the idea of being able to play Steam games and stuff, but I don't know. I might let other people test those waters first. Again, as a creator, maybe I'll do it. But as a player, I don't really see it.
But what if it's next gen? What if it's not the Pro? Like, let's say that we're past the PS5 and the PS5 Pro and the Xbox Series whatever, and we're to the PS6 and the next Xbox. Are you interested in buying one, Russ? Or are you going to say yes?
Yeah, if it's a next generation upgrade and they've done something significant, like I was mentioning, they need to do something big. They do something big, like putting in Steam on there. They make it a handheld that's compatible with, you know, like all that kind of stuff. If they innovate, I totally want to be there. I want to try it out. I love Microsoft. I think about Microsoft Xbox 360 and I like get those same warm feeling that I get from the PS2 and from the, you know, from the Super Nintendo. Like, it's the same like nostalgic feeling. And I love that. Microsoft's got my trust in many ways, but I also have gotten a little bit of like, wariness just over the past 2 cycles of being a little bit burnt. And so they've got my trust still. I want them to succeed. If they make a next generation device, I'm all for it. I'm just not going to do that mid-cycle crap.
Yeah. Well, that makes a lot of sense. I think a lot of times the mid-cycle stuff is not for the people that bought the first one. There are some people who buy everything, but it, like, I didn't buy the PS4. I ended up buying the PS4 Pro. And I think it's that kind of thing where people are like, I'm finally, you know, I'm going to buy it because the library is bigger now. Oh, I can either get the one that came out a couple of years ago, or I can get the new one that's a little bit better. Well, let me go with the one that's a little bit better. Well, you know, mentioning Xbox real quick, I just want to mention that tomorrow for us, it's yesterday for everybody watching this. You guys, you're in the future. What's it like? Do you guys have flying cars? Let us know. But tomorrow for us and yesterday for you all, they're doing an indie game Xbox and IGN showcase at 10 a.m. on April 29th. I just wanted to let people know about it so they could check it out, and we'll probably talk about that next week. All right. Something else that I wanted to mention. Nintendo. We talked a lot about Nintendo today. They were asked, they said, hey, can we get Samus in Fortnite? And Nintendo said no. And I am not even a little bit surprised. Nintendo said, they said, only if it's exclusive to the Nintendo Switch. So the example that I would give is in Rocket League. When Rocket League came to the Nintendo Switch, they had Mario and Luigi cars that you could only get if you were playing Rocket League on the Nintendo Switch. Fine. But you could see them on the other systems. And apparently they wanted it to be so that if you were playing as Samus, you could only see it if you were on the Nintendo Switch. It says they got really hung up on characters showing up on platforms that weren't their platforms. They said they would be thrilled to have Nintendo characters in Fortnite, but only if it's on their platform. So here's my question to you guys, because there's no, I mean, this is just a funny story. What, like, Fortnite, I don't play Fortnite. I have no problem with Fortnite. I have played Fortnite in the past. It is an objectively good game, even if everybody who are the real gamers like to crap all over it. It's a good game. They do a lot of really cool things over there. And other companies could look at the way that they build their world and change it nonstop as something that you can do with live service games, because it's amazing how they do that. That being said, what, like, if you could have a character be in some other game, like, what character would you want to be in some other game? Carrie, what do you think?
When you say some other game, which you're saying in Fortnite?
Some live service game that like, you know, kind of like how you could just use Fortnite as an example. You know, some character that you love that's, you know.
I like having some synergy with games. Like having like Saitama or whatever show up in Fortnite doesn't move the needle for me. Like just having like Goku showing up in Fortnite and then giving him like an AK-47. Like Goku doesn't need an AK-47.
Who are these?
In Fortnite, they have the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. They have every.
I know who those are. What are the guys that you said?
Oh, Dragon Ball Z and One Punch Man. Oh. Yeah. So, having those doesn't really move the needle for me, because it's like a. I mean, you may as well just make it like, you know, I don't know, a car into a person. And it's like, well, all right, whatever. I guess people want that. For me, it's like if you had like Halo, the Halo multiplayer game, and you put Doom Guy in there, I'm like, okay, all right, well, that at least tracks, right? You have a FPS guy in Halo. That makes sense to me. Having Doom Guy in Fortnite makes sense to me. Having Master Chief in Fortnite makes sense to me.
I think Samus makes sense too. Like, she doesn't really use guns, but she's got a gun hand.
Absolutely, Samus makes sense to me in Fortnite, big time. So that's a no brainer to me. But it's like Nintendo's just very old school, so it's just, you know, it's just funny, right? But it's like the Soul Calibur thing. Remember when Soul Calibur, you could play Link in Soul Calibur for GameCube,
right?
And yeah, Spawn. That was
Spawn and Yoda on. No, wait, what was on PlayStation?
Hey Hachi, like the Tekken guy.
I mean, for me, it was either the GameCube version or the Xbox version. I was like, I really like Spawn, but I really like Link. I like both of these characters. So that was a cool thing, but that made more sense back then, right? And today it makes no sense to like have Samus be only on Nintendo Switch, and that would make a bunch of people upset. So it's good that Epic was like, no, thank you. We'll walk away now.
What if it was like you got that skin and it was like a chameleon skin? So if you're playing on the Switch, it looked like Samus. If you're playing on the Xbox, it looked like Master Chief. Oh. And if you're playing on PlayStation,
how would it look like?
Crash Bandicoot.
Yeah. Well, they can't do that via Microsoft owns Crash now.
Oh, that's right.
Jack and Kratos.
Ratchet. Yeah, Ratchet is the one I was thinking of.
Yeah, Ratchet would make sense. But how would you even sell that? You would sell the chameleon skin that was useful anywhere, and like depending on whatever system you're playing on, it would switch up.
I don't know.
Which company gets the money for that? Like Nintendo's like, oh, they're being Samus there. We need that money. Like, no. That's the chameleon skin. It's such a. I don't know how that would work from a business point of view, but I get where you're coming from.
I'm just trying to give the Fortnite people their Samus. That's all.
it's really unfortunate. But I'm glad that they walked away. I'm glad that they walked away from that ridiculous compromise.
So I'd love to see Master Chief in Destiny 2. I think it'd just be like a return to form.
That would be,
you know what I mean?
Hilarious.
That would be awesome. Yeah. And Bill, you were thinking, you know, with the Yoda thing, I think that's Soul Calibur 3 or 4. They had like Darth Vader and Yoda on the different ones. And so I never really played those, but I remember Soul Calibur 2 because I really wanted Spawn, you know? And so that's pretty awesome.
Very, very cool. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of the Nerd Nest podcast. Before we get out of here, I got a video that I talked about at the beginning of the show. Make sure you guys check that out. I'll link it down below. I'll also link Russ's video about
setting up a handheld for children or adult children. That's kind of how I'm framing it. So yeah, super awesome.
I'm an adult children, and speaking of adult children, Carrie, what video are you gonna be linked down for?
Put me down for the INEO Flip DS one. That's the one that I probably was happy with that I made recently. The new videos that I have coming out, I don't even know when I'm gonna be. It's hopefully this week, but I couldn't tell you.
That's fair. But thank you guys for hanging out with us. We have a special guest next week. I'll tell the guys about it after we're done recording. But make sure you come back next time to find out more.